We're very excited to have our next guest aboard. His name is Damien Fowler. He's the author of a new book just out called Falling Through Clouds. And if you lived in Cook County in 2003, you probably remember the tragic plane crash in the Superior National Forest just east of the Devil's Track Airport that took the lives of the pilot, his sister, kind of miraculously, two little girls in the plane that survived. Journalist Damien Fowler has written a book about the crash and its aftermath, and of course, it's, as I mentioned, is called Falling Through Clouds. He joins us now by telephone from New York. And Damien, I want to thank you a lot for finding time for the Roadhouse tonight.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. Pleasure to be speaking to you.
You've been a journalist, I think, for better than 10 years out of New York City for the BBC from England. And
yeah.
And now you're a freelance contributor, and you're still working with the BBC a lot and The Guardian. How did this story happening, in the middle of America, find you?
Well, I've always been a big fan of great American stories, American narrative, like In Cold Blood by Capote, and that particularly that book. And as a graduate of Columbia School of Journalism back in the late 90s, I was always looking for a big story that would kind of capture some of the values and vastness of this great country. So a few years ago, I heard about Toby's story through a friend of a friend, and Toby Pearson himself had written a short kind of statement in a sense of what he'd been through after this crash, you know, where his daughter survived the crash up there in Grand Marais. And it seemed like there was a tremendous odyssey to this journey of a father trying to nurse his daughters back to health, and it involved many different people, from the sheriff, Mark Falk, to a lawyer who comes on the scene later on to help Toby with an insurance case that stems from this crash. So it had all of these great elements, not to look at it just as a story, but it had these fantastic elements that kind of drew me in to this kind of canvas that I knew was going to make a great book.
Can you give just a brief version, a better version than I did on the intro of this event for our folks out in the audience?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a remarkable story. It was essentially a small plane crash which happened with a pilot, Charlie Erickson, and it was actually his sister-in-law, and they were traveling up to Grand Marais to then go up Gunflint Trail to go into the up to a cabin for a grandfather's birthday. And the two little girls on the flight, Grace and Lily Pearson, who were 3 and 4 at the time, were excited about this Labor Day weekend party. And the idea was that they would go there and have this party with their grandfather, and their dad, Toby, was stayed behind in the cities, and he was to travel up the next day. Unfortunately, bad weather intervened, and the plane crashed for a number of reasons that I go into in the book. On the boat, the girls miraculously survived, and they were several hours in the forest, and thanks to local search and rescue teams there, including a brave pilot by the name of Dan Anderson, who is probably known to many of your listeners, who flew up in this bad weather to try to locate the crash site. He was responsible, along with the sheriff's team, for finding these girls in the middle of this old-growth forest. Subsequent to that, Toby had to go through this kind of father's nightmare, essentially, of losing his wife, but seeing his daughters just barely survive with terrible burns, and they had all sorts of other injuries related to the crash, not to mention the psychological trauma of losing their mom, seeing their mom die in front of them, essentially. That led to a whole medical odyssey for Toby. And then, on top of that, he learned there was a complication with the pilot's insurance. What happened is that the pilot's insurance company denied liability coverage, which Toby and the family were counting on to cover some of the extensive medical bills that you can only imagine, mounted up after this. So those elements there contributed to this story. So it was a kind of story of survival, as I say, a story of love and a story of liability.
When I sat down to read this book, you start off through the eyes of Carolyn, which would be the little girl's aunt, and her husband was piloting the plane, and lead us through the crash. And then also the then-Deputy Sheriff Mark Falk coming into the scene after Dan Anderson, by flying in bad weather, discovered where the crash site was. And Mark finds the little girls, and one of the little girls said to Mark, "Mommy burned up." And, yeah, you know, when you read something like that, it's just, you know, it just grabs you. The tears just kind of come out. And it's that kind of feeling that you get throughout this book, the braveness of these little girls, 4 and 3 years old.
Absolutely. You know, that was remarkable. And when Sheriff Mark Falk told me that story, you know, he was still very emotional about this moment. And, you know, after speaking to him for a long time on the phone, my palms were sweating to hear him narrate this, mm-hmm, this rescue. And, you know, at first he described it thinking he didn't know there were any children on the plane. That was the remarkable thing. And then as they went through the forest to try to cut their way through, he saw these, what he thought were two little dolls, but they weren't dolls. They were children. And that's when I think the older girl, Grace, said, "That mummy burned up," and it truly must have been a staggering moment.
Mm-hmm. And the bravery that she had, and just the ability to lead her little sister away from the burning. And the little sister, we find out later, and she got burned very badly, also had two broken legs.
Exactly, yeah, and because of the extensive nature of the third-degree burns that Lily had, I think the break in her leg was not diagnosed until later on, mm-hmm, because they were so busy dealing with the burns that they didn't notice later on when Toby was with his daughter, I believe, after they moved them to the burn center at Regions. He noticed that one of her legs was sticking out at an odd angle. It wasn't quite right. Anyway, he describes it as they're watching The Lion King, and Lily was sitting in his lap, and he looked down and he thought something wasn't right. And they x-rayed the leg, and they found this hairline fracture, which fortunately they could fix. But there are many kind of little moments like that that kind of, as I was talking to Toby, I felt for him deeply, you know, the empathy I had for this man who'd been through this thing. And at each stage there was some new barrier, there was he was dealing with grief, he was dealing with medical problems, but he had to keep going. And the resilience of the man, that's so remarkable, I think.
Yes, it comes through very strongly in the book. And also, you must have had incredible access to members of the family to get the detail into your narrative. They shared you, you know, all of the nuances of the story.
I mean, yeah, that was a real gift, because, you know, you're as good as when you're a reporter, you're as good as the people who you interview, and in many ways. And it was very generous in many ways for everyone to give me access, as they did, not just into the facts of what happened, but into their inner lives. And that's a difficult thing to ask of people, you know, especially when you're dealing with big questions of grief and loss, and some of those things can't necessarily be articulated. And that was a challenge for me as a writer and a journalist. I mean, in fact, probably the greatest challenge I've ever had as a journalist, to try to capture those kind of internal feelings without being kind of maudlin about it. So that was thanks to this great access. And over time, of course, over the years I reported it. I mean, the book took 3 years, but the reporting was fairly extensive. I found more and more details. People opened up further and further. I guess it was a question of trust on both sides. So that was a real gift.
There was a certain amount of time. Actually, I'm sure for the people involved, it probably took longer than they thought. But the process to determine why the plane crashed had to cause some friction in some ways between family members, because the pilot, of course, was brother-in-law to Toby, and Carolyn, being the sister of his wife who did perish, they were very close.
That's exactly right. There were, I mean, potentially this crash could have torn the family apart. I mean, but the way that the Pearsons and the Wall families, the two families, handled this with such restraint, maturity, level-headedness, is another kind of remarkable thing. Because when I first heard about the story, I thought, wow, you know, this is devastating. The amount of, I mean, technically, theoretically, I mean, Toby could have put all the blame on Charlie Erickson, the pilot, for this crash. Though, you know, the NTSB investigation revealed various different factors involved in the crash. But he, remarkably, he didn't do that. He kind of accepted it in some ways and tried to deal with the hand he was dealt. I don't know whether that was a great answer, but
Go ahead. In the book, it's obvious that you had there was a lot of learning to be found in what you wrote about how they determined fault, and also all the different nuances of why a plane like that would crash in that kind of weather.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I got into in the book, partly because I was curious about what it meant to be a survivor of a plane crash. And so I started looking at that. You know, what's the legacy? There was a big piece in the St. Paul Pioneer Press a few weeks after the crash, and it described, the headline was Amazing Grace, referring to the old daughter. And there was a lot of talk of miracles, miracle child. And in some ways, Toby didn't like that notion, because he said, well, whilst there may have been a miracle for my daughters, there wasn't one for my wife. So it doesn't really help when the media starts using words like that. So what I wanted to know is, what is the legacy of survival, and does it help to call someone a miracle child? So I looked at various different plane crashes and really focused on the small planes. And I found, to my alarm, that there is a high incidence, well, much higher anyway, relative to commercial planes, in this general aviation field. So I kind of like document some of those. And indeed, I did speak to some survivors of other crashes to find out how they were faring now. And, you know, the legacy is not kind necessarily to someone who's been through something traumatic as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as the book progresses and we find that Toby is going to have a lot of problems with insurance companies, particularly one large insurance company that had insured Charlie Erickson as an aviator. It seemed that his occupation as a lobbyist, and also finding John Dornick as a lawyer who had some experience with aviation cases, they were big things in how things went as far as being successful against this large insurance company. And of course, the empathy of two little girls surviving such a horrific crash was also a part of where that went.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, he was thrust into the middle of this legal battle with the insurance company that wanted to deny coverage, and it seemed unjust to Toby that, you know, money that should have been paid out was being withheld, and for various technical reasons, and I get into it in the book. But thankfully, he did have some background. Toby's a lawyer himself, become a lobbyist, and then he had a friend, John Dornick, a trial lawyer who is based in the Twin Cities, who helped steer him through these legal complexities and try to fight back against these this declaratory judgment that the insurance company wanted. They wanted to avoid the any liability insurance. John Dornick found a way to fight back, and one of the ways, of course, was, you know, the prospect of a trial against an insurance company, putting an insurance company up against two little girls, would not have played well for the insurance company. So that was a factor. Toby actually said to me that, imagine what I've been through as somebody with all, you know, the people I know, my education, my background, and how difficult it has been. But imagine what it would be like for people without those opportunities in life to have to go through this, have to deal with this kind of medical and legal crisis. So I think even while he was doing that, Toby was aware of the kind of advantages, if you like, that he had as a person connected to the law and connected to the state house in Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Damien Fowler, and Damien is a journalist and now also author. His new book out is called Flying Through Clouds. And Damien, you mentioned that he had some, as a lobbyist, he had some inroads there with the state legislature, and of course, after that, the win against the insurance company, he decided to do something about the law that put him in that place.
Yes, exactly. He thought that it really wasn't fair for third parties, such as his daughters, to have to be denied coverage when it was no fault of theirs what the pilot did or did not say on an insurance form, which was the point of the legal battle, was had Charlie Erickson lied on this form, and if so, therefore the entire policy was avoided. So Toby didn't really get into whether he did or did not, but what he wanted to know is, how is it possible for a company to just deny coverage for third parties when that money should have been, you know, paid to them? So that took him down a whole another route, which ended up lobbying for a particular law to change that loophole, to close that loophole, I should say. And in the process of doing that, he also learned a lot about general aviation and some of the fairly lax liability laws, both at that point in the state and also on a federal level. Toby also had contact with the late Representative Jim Oberstar, who features in the book too, and who listened sympathetically to Toby and also gave him some kind of legal and political advice about where he might go with this. So he took all that on board too. So I also found that, you know, going from a grieving father to being this, should we say, campaigner to change what he saw as an inadequate law was a kind of remarkable journey. And it really was a journey, because it started in 2003 and it didn't really end till 2010.
So that took up a major part of this young father's life, when of course he's also dealing with young girls who are trying to come out of such a horrific accident.
Exactly, yes. And one of the aspects of this that I wanted to explore were the pediatrics, like what children go through after something like this. And that was a whole fascinating area to explore. You know, how do little children deal with something as horrific as that? Mm-hmm. And one of the kind of prevailing images when I first heard about the story was one of Snow White and Rose Red, you know, lost in the forest, and there were these two girls in the forest who, you know, there but for the Dan Anderson and the sheriff, would have been lost forever. And they were found and then nursed back to health. So that's their legacy, I guess. And so I was interested in that whole process of them finding out and dealing with the loss of their mother and their injuries. Mm-hmm. That was a very moving part of the research for me.
Absolutely. You're going to be in Duluth next Friday and addressing the Minnesota Association for Justice, and you're the keynote speaker, and that must be kind of a position that you probably never thought you'd see yourself in before this book.
That's true. That's very true, yes. I never thought I'd be addressing trial lawyers in Duluth. And so, in a way, the book has opened up all sorts of opportunities, you know, for me in that way. I don't have a, you know, I'm not a lawyer by training, but I've been very interested in the legal components of narrative and stories. And so it's definitely taken me on a new trajectory there. So I'm a little intimidated about speaking in front of so many lawyers, but I hope they'll be kind.
I think if they've read this book, they'll be very kind, Damien. So now when you're in Duluth, will you be visiting, have an opportunity or in Minnesota to catch up with Toby Pearson and his two girls, Grace and Lily?
Oh, indeed, yeah. One of the great things about this is that this book has allowed me to get to know Minnesota pretty well. I mean, obviously when I was reporting the book, I was there, and then I've gone back many times now, and I will be briefly in St. Paul on Thursday to visit Toby, and I'll see the girls, and that's a pleasure. They're young teens now, and so I'll catch up with Toby and then head up to Duluth the next day, weather permitting. I you know, it's cold here in New York, but I hear it's much colder up there in Grand Marais and Duluth.
Yeah, tomorrow will be, and I guess all next week is going to be a little on the cool side, so bring an extra coat along. That's for sure. We've been speaking with Damien Fowler, and he is the author of his first book, and it's called Falling Through Clouds. And my co-host has just pointed out to me that I keep referring to it as Flying Through Clouds. So those of you who heard that, it's Falling Through Clouds. And that term came from one of the little girls, didn't it, Damien?
It did, yes. I mean, when they were going through this therapy process, there were some oblique references to what happened. Many of the adults were very curious to know what the girls saw and experienced. And because they were so young, it wasn't really, you know, a clear narrative, but they would describe different sensations. And at one point, Grace said, "We were falling through clouds." Mm-hmm. And that phrase, when I read it and heard it, immediately stuck with me. And I said, that's the title of the book.
Yeah, and it's a great title.
Very early on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For people who, do you have your own website, Damien, involving this book?
I have my own website, yes, and Facebook and, you know, all the social media that one is expected to do. But yeah, sure. DamienFowler.com, and my name is Damien with an A. I'd be very grateful if people would be are interested, and I'd be happy to, you know, hear from people if they want to write me via the website. Will be very welcome.
And your book is available through any bookstore, I'm assuming. And
it is, and it's coming out in paperback actually in April. So there's a second chance to to get it. But I'm very grateful for the experience and the opportunity, and in particular for allowing me to get to know the state of Minnesota, which is a great state.
Well, we want to thank you so much for allowing our listeners to get to know you, and we appreciated you giving us your time. So thank you very much.
Thank you.